Hello, and welcome to episode 187 here on the Yours Truly podcast. I am your host, Claire Chuning. I'm a non-diet registered dietitian who is all about adding things in and talking about nutrition in a fun and accessible and non-intimidating way, and I hope that shines through here on the podcast. I have a really special guest on today's episode. Her name is Rahel. We will talk to her here in a little bit about deep work therapy and disordered eating recovery and a lot of the things that I talk to many guests here on the show about. So I'm really looking forward to sharing our recording with you here in a couple moments, but I figured just in the intro, we could have a little chat, catch up. I realize as I'm sitting down to record this that I did not release an episode in March. If you're new here, I release episodes on a monthly basis. I find that is the pace that is most manageable for me and my business and my mental health. But I didn't release one in March, which is kind of a bummer because March is National Nutrition Month. But when I look back at everything that I had going on, I was spending a lot of time creating content on other platforms, specifically Instagram and TikTok. I did a video series I was calling the Back to Basics series, and I sourced a lot of just foundational nutrition questions from my followers, and we made a couple really cool videos covering topics like what are macronutrients and why do we need them, or sugar versus sugar alternatives. I had one on meal planning and how we can do that from an intuitive eating, non-restrictive lens. So actually a lot of the things that Rahel and I are going to talk about today are, we actually did a interview swap, so I interviewed her for my podcast, and then she interviewed me as well. And on the episode we did for her podcast, we talked a lot about gentle nutrition and how we can understand these basic nutritional concepts without making it disordered or obsessive in any way. So if you're coming over from her show, whenever that episode comes out, you'll definitely want to check out that Back to Basics series, because now that I'm thinking about it, I made a lot of videos about some of the questions that she asked me about. But anyways, I was doing that. I traveled for work a couple of times in March, so it was a month, but I hope you're hanging in there. And honestly, in my mind, every month is nutrition month because we are all human beings that need to eat every single day and think about food at least to a certain extent. So at least in my world, I'm talking about nutrition every month, even if it's not March. But here we are in April. I don't know about where you live, but it very much feels like we skipped over spring entirely where I live. Maybe a couple weeks in March we had more of the crisp but sunny spring days, but yesterday it was like 85 degrees where I live. I live right here on the coast of Virginia, the Chesapeake Bay, and I was taking a walk yesterday afternoon. I was fully sunscreened up because, of course, didn't want to get sunburnt, and it seems like everyone in this zip code just took Monday off. People were out on boats. People were laying on the beach. It was a really nice environment to be in. Everyone was happy, and the sunlight was elevating all of our moods and probably our vitamin D levels as well. So I hope if you're experiencing any of this sunlight, you're maybe getting out, coming out of the winter shell. And I know that's good for all of our physical health, but our emotional and mental health as well. So I've been doing some of that. Actually, as I'm recording this, I just got back into town. I don't know if you can hear that loud beeping sound, but I think one of my neighbors is backing out of a driveway. Very loud. I apologize. But I just got back yesterday from another work trip that I was traveling for. I went to my alma mater, James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia, to speak at VAND, or the Virginia Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, at their annual conference. I presented on a panel with Valerie from Flourish Heights. If you don't follow Valerie, be sure to follow her on Instagram. She is a women's health dietitian, does a lot of great, you know, speaking engagements and a lot of awesome education. So Flourish Heights, again, is her social media handle. But we talked about nutrition entrepreneurship, and actually one of my old professors moderated the panel, so it was super cool to be able to reconnect with her. But we talked about dietitians partnering with industry, so like paid posts and FTC guidelines, and how we select our collaborations. So we're making sure that we present products that align with our values, and some of those tricky situations that some dietitians are falling under fire for recently, especially with the recent Washington Post article, which if you follow me on Instagram, I had several slides up on my Instagram story about 48 hours after that story broke with my response to that. So won't get into that here, but it was really nice to be able to talk about nutrition, entrepreneurship, and all the things. So if I met you at Vand, I know several of you came up to me after the panel and said that you listen to the podcast and you follow me on social media. So it was awesome to be able to meet you in real life. And if you weren't there, then sad. Maybe I'll be able to meet you another time. Let's see, what else have I been up to? You all know, I guess, two final things before we get into the episode, and then I'll stop blabbing about non-nutrition stuff, but you all know I am a huge reader of fiction novels. I, for Christmas this past year, got a Kindle, and it is probably the gift that has changed my day-to-day life the most. Like, the gift, it's the gift that keeps on giving, I guess I can put it that way. I actually, for my recent book club pick, I had to read a physical copy of a book, and I enjoyed the book, but I couldn't wait to be done with it because I just wanted to be back on my Kindle. It just makes reading so much easier, and you can lay in so many comfy positions. This is not sponsored by Kindle, although I wish it was. That would be a dream collab. But anyways, on my Kindle, when I finished that physical book, I have been deep into the ACOTAR series, A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas, however you say her last name, but I just started the final book in the series last night. The fourth book is so short. It was like 250 pages compared to all the other ones that are like between 600 and 800 pages. So I'm starting the final book, which is close to 800 pages. I will be really sad when I'm done with the series, but this was my first step into reading fantasy, the fairies and these magical powers and this alternate universe. Like, you know when the fiction book opens with a map of a world that is not our world, you're really going to be in for it. But if you've never read fantasy before, I highly recommend this series. It really drew me in. I know it's one of the most popular ones out there right now. This is not a hot take, but if you want something other than food and nutrition to think about and read about, I highly recommend The World of Prithian, the fairies. And then final thing, as I am recording this intro, we are about 3 days out from the release of The Tortured Poets Department. And yes, I have just stopped calling it the Tortured Poet Society. Like, after she announced this upcoming album, I think all of us in the Swiftie universe were wrongly calling it Tortured Poet Society. It just rolls off the tongue a little bit more, but it is in fact department. And I've been so busy with like traveling and doing things, I don't think I've really wrapped my mind around the fact that we are days, nay, hours away from getting a new album. And I honestly cannot wait. I have no idea what it's going to sound like. I imagine it might be a, if I had to guess, maybe a cross between Reputation, but with a little bit more like folklore sound and vibe, maybe even a little bit of Evermore. I'm probably just guessing that because of all the cover art and the stuff that we've seen from this album so far is black and white, which are the same colors as Folklore and Reputation. So I don't know what it's going to sound like, but I am very excited. I always love being on the internet the day after any kind of big musical artist release, especially a Taylor Swift album, because I'm a huge fan, so I will be excited to partake in the discourse online with everything that's going on. I'll also say maybe part of the reason why I haven't fully wrapped my mind around the fact that we're getting a new album is because there has been so much other great music that's been released in the past month and a half. Cowboy Carter, 10 out of 10, no notes. It is probably my favorite Beyoncé album ever. I love it. I still listen to it every single day on repeat. I love Taylor Swift. You all know this if you have been a listener of the podcast for a while. And I'm excited for Tortured Poets, but honestly, I don't know if anything will be able to top Cowboy Carter this year. It was amazing. I hope she wins Album of the Year with that, even without hearing Tortured Poets. Again, we can love both. There's room for two amazing women in music. And speaking of another amazing woman in music, Maggie Rogers' new album, I believe it's called Don't Forget Me. I'm a big Maggie Rogers fan as well. She killed it. So if you're listening to all this amazing music like I am, it's a It's a good time to be alive if we can survive the pollen, at least here on the East Coast. But anyways, I said those would be my last two updates, so I will stop blabbing now and get on to introducing our guest and the topic of today's episode. I mentioned earlier that with today's guest, we will be talking about some of the benefits of deep work therapy and disordered eating recovery. We talk a little bit about some of the lesser known signs of disordered eating or an eating disorder and how all of these things can exist on a spectrum. We also talk a little bit about how when the outward symptoms of disordered eating or an eating disorder begin to improve, that's really where the emotional work begins. So she takes us through that as well. But let's talk a little bit about Rahel and her background. So Rahel is a licensed mental health counselor and licensed professional counselor. She specializes in working with individuals with disordered eating and eating disorders, as well as depression, anxiety, relationship issues, and deep work therapy. In addition to her practice, Rahel is an educator and speaker. She has taught courses in eating disorders and body image at undergraduate programs and as continuing education for clinicians. She is the host of the podcast Understanding Disordered Eating, and Rahel is part of an executive leadership team at IADEP New York, which stands for the International Association for Eating Disorder Professionals. I really loved this conversation with Rahel. I hope you will as well. We will have all of the information on where to find her on social media and her podcast. Like I said before, we did a pod swap, so I don't know when my interview will be coming out on Understanding Disordered Eating, but hopefully you all can go and follow her show as well if you enjoy what we talk about here today. But without further ado, let's go ahead and get into this conversation. Hi, Rahel. Welcome to the Yours to Be podcast. I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's so wonderful to be here.
Yeah, I was complimenting the beautiful orchids that you have behind you. This is not one of our this or that questions, but I have to know, are you like a lover of all things indoor plants? Do you have them everywhere?
Oh my God. I love indoor plants and I kill them. So The only indoor plant that I have is an orchid. And we have a running rotation of them.
Maybe the this or that could be like orchids or no orchids.
Orchids. How about fake orchids? Those are ones that don't die.
Yeah. Well, I do have a couple more this or that questions for you before we dig into our episode. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Pizza or pasta?
Oh, pizza. Every time.
Did not hesitate immediately to your answer. Okay. What about sunrise or sunset?
Ooh, I think sunrise.
Okay.
There's something about the morning when everybody's sleeping. It's so peaceful.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a good word to describe it. Peaceful. I live very close to the beach. So sometimes when I wake up early enough, I can like poke my head out the window and see like beautiful sunrise and water. So I'm with you. The sunsets are great, but so are the sunrises.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. When it comes to eggs, very specific niche question here, scrambled or like a hard boiled egg salad type situation?
You know, it's interesting. The only way that I like my eggs is scrambled. I don't think that I can tolerate any other way unless it's like baked into something. So I guess I'd have to say scrambled.
I'm with you. It's the best because you can put cheese in it that way. all the seasonings.
Did you know that if you put cream in it or at least half and half, I mean, I guess if you have nothing else, you can do milk. It makes it super fluffy.
I believe somewhere in like the back of my dietitian culinary knowledge, I probably knew that, but you make a good point that I should probably restock my dairy. I do know of a dietitian who before on social media has put cottage cheese in an egg scramble and talks about how like fluffy and creamy it is. I have never tried that personally, but I wonder if from like a food science perspective, it's similar.
Yeah, I don't know if I can get behind the cottage cheese. I think maybe Bobby Flay said the heavy cream. So I'll leave the food science to him.
in Bobby Flay, we trust. Okay, I have two more. So when it comes to movies or TV shows, do you prefer a comedy or a drama?
I'd say comedy.
Okay, lighthearted.
I like to laugh. I'm not against a drama, but I think that I I'm a therapist. I hear too much drama during the day. I'd like to laugh and just sit there and eat my popcorn.
Yeah, so something to balance out like the weight of your work sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, although in a really boring way, I'm even more into documentaries than comedy. So,
Oh, okay. Like
go
learn
figure.
something as you go.
I guess so.
Yeah. Okay, final question. Do you like things that are a more sweet profile or a more savory? Like I guess we'll talk snacks, sweet or savory.
So this is a hard question because I think my entire life I've been much more sweets. I'm obsessed with ice cream. Love, love, love it. I think over the last like year or so, I've been into the savory. Like, I cannot put down my Trader Joe's chili lime chips. I think me and the rest of the world. So perhaps that one snack is signing me up for the other side. But I guess if I had to choose one, I'd have to go with sweets. But like, come on, you're gonna make me choose one?
Thankfully, we live in a world where like we can have both and we need both,
Right.
right, to balance out the flavor profiles. But yeah, for the sake of the game, I like to see where people's loyalties lie. Like if you had to choose one, that's the chili lime chips, those are like the roll-ups. Right, like the ones in the bright pink and lime green bag. I love
Yep.
those. I don't know if you've ever tried them with the, it's like a spinach and kale yogurt dip that they have.
Interesting.
I think it's a really good combo because the yogurt is nice and cooling to balance out the zingy flavor of the chips.
That's smart. I was actually thinking the other day I should try a dip, but like there's just so much. You can't do it with any old dip.
Right. Definitely not another one of their spicy dips unless you like spicy on spicy, like something to balance it.
Yeah, maybe shy away from that one. They're very spicy chips, especially if you have as many as I do.
Yeah. Well, I guess our listeners, even before we get into the real recording, the real episode, they already have a snack recommendation. Chili
There
lime.
you go.
Okay, well, I'd love for you to just share a little bit more about your story, how you came to do what you do today. And like I said before, you can share 30 seconds or longer just so we know where you're coming from.
Yeah, well, so I'm a therapist by training. I'm a mental health counselor or a professional counselor in Jersey. And I practice in New York and New Jersey. I'm a certified eating disorder specialist. So the population that I see right now is primarily, I was going to say young women, but like 30s and 40s, I guess 20s, 30s and 40s. How young is young? Who knows? With either eating disorders or disordered eating or just some sort of something with their relationship with food and their body. And I'm also psychoanalytically trained. So for those people who don't really know what that is, it's a lot of trying to understand a little bit more of what's behind some of the symptoms. So when we think about eating disorders, it's what's the function of the eating disorder? When we think about depression or anxiety, it's, what's going on underneath the surface, as opposed to just thinking about what are the three things that I can do to take this away. So my perspective as an eating disorder therapist is actually quite unique because most people who come into the field are thinking about eating disorders, behavior change. Like that's the way to do it. And I think part of what drew me to this kind of work is A, like as a person in this world, everyone is obsessed with thinness and health. And I mean, like at some point it was weight loss. Now who knows what it is, but like everybody is obsessed with their relationship with food. And I'm glad to see that it isn't so much the case, maybe just because of the world that I surround myself with, but it's still very much in this world. And I think as I was like teenager and getting into my 20s, it was the kind of thing where it just is so competitive and I guess vain to a certain extent. And I was like, there's got to be a little bit more to it than just trying to be thin. And then when I was doing my post-grad training in psychoanalytic or psychodynamic psychotherapy, it was like, okay, so yes, healing your relationship with food is obviously really, really important, but also what is going on that we feel the need to do this? What is going on that I feel the need to do this? What is going on that the person in front of me feels the need to do this? And so there was sort of like these worlds colliding of let's help people obviously bring down the anxiety in their mind and heal their relationship with food, but also like let's get them further. let's get them to a place where they feel calm within themselves, where they are able to find more meaning, whatever that means to them. And so fast forward here, my practice is basically working with people with relationship with food stuff and trying to understand a little bit more of the deeper stuff. Like, what is this about? I'm also a podcast host because we can't ever do one thing. You know, that's just way too boring. Yeah. My host is Understanding Disordered Eating, which is exactly what I was talking about. Just understanding the relationship with food and on a little bit more on a deeper and sometimes more controversial level. And I like speaking and educating. I do tons of webinars. I work with a lot of clinicians who are either they don't specialize in eating disorders, or they do and they want to learn more. So trying to understand a little bit more of what goes into the deeper stuff that's the work that I do, and trying to help their clients even more. So I would say that's sort of like the long and short of who I am and my work.
Yeah. I love talking with therapists on the podcast and offline too, because I feel like the work that we do is very complementary. You from the therapy perspective, me from like the nutrition dietetics perspective, but it sounds like based on what you just described, and correct me if this is wrong, but I wonder if a lot of the work that you do with people, food might be the entry point or one of the main pain points that is surfacing for them coming to see you, right? I want help in my relationship with food, in my relationship with my body. And yes, 100% you help them with that. But I imagine by the end of your work together, even if there is an end, quote unquote, like you've probably touched on so many more things than just their relationship with food, because like you're saying, it goes deeper than that. Is that a true statement?
Oh my God, you totally hit the nail on the head, or whatever that phrase is.
Yeah,
exactly. I think ultimately people talk less and less and less about their relationship with food and more so about everything else, because ultimately when we think about someone's relationship with food, yeah, that's primary right now. That's the biggest thing that's bringing them distress. But ultimately that doesn't happen in a vacuum. So we have to think about their relationships with other people, their relationship at work, their relationship to work, their past experience, the thoughts that they have in their mind, the stories they tell themselves, how they interact with other people, social media. I mean, like, there's so much more to the picture here.
There's more to being a person than just eating. And I guess that's a lot of what you touch on. One thing that I wanted to ask, I feel like a lot of the times on social media, the relationship with food or like disordered eating content that gets covered is, you know, like, here are some signs that your relationship with food might need work, or here are some signs that you are a disordered eater. And I talk a lot about that. I'm sure you do as well, but I'm wondering if you might be able to share with us any more subtle signs that someone might be struggling in their relationship with food. You know, obviously the obvious ones could be like food obsession, constantly body checking, fear around calories, or, you know, constantly thinking about food. But I'm curious what else you see in your practice that might go missed.
Yeah. Well, the way that I like to think of people's relationship with food is on a continuum. So on one side of the continuum is somebody has a healthy relationship with food, if that, you know, even exists for the majority of people, who knows. And then on the other side is like serious raging eating disorder. So on the continuum is disordered eating, moving into eating disorder. And it's hard to tease out when it crosses the line into something, into the next category. And I don't think that there is a line, but I think ultimately what that tells me and what it tells a lot of us is that the symptoms are also on continuums. So on continuum, is that the way to say it? Continuums?
Continuums. Yeah. I feel like that.
Many right. Continuums. I feel like there should be a fancy way. Continua, you know, like. Anyways, the idea is that when we're dealing with symptoms, there's, yes, restricting, binging, purging, and that's very clear-cut eating disorder. But then when you go on the more gray side, something where it's a little bit more subtle, it might be the exact same symptom, but on a lower scale. And so what I mean by that is, say, for example, we're talking about obsessions about food. So somebody might say, I think about food 100% of the time. I dream about food. Excuse me. Sorry. I dream about food. It's all I can think about. It's really anxiety provoking. It's just all the time. And what about somebody who thinks about it, but it isn't 100% of the time? So they're, you know, just sort of like dreaming about what am I going to make for dinner while it's during the day? Or they're thinking about what am I going to order for lunch? And it's, you know, maybe lunch is not for another hour, but they're thinking about what they're going to order on Uber Eats. Let's say they're doing that today. So I would say if you find yourself thinking about food more so than just, okay, practically speaking, what do I need to get in the grocery? And you just sort of almost find yourself in this fantasy. That's a version of the obsession with food. It's a lot more subtle, but it sort of gives us a little bit more information about how much of the time you're hungry and how much of the time you're obsessing about food. Another branch of this is, say, somebody maybe doesn't necessarily love cooking or baking, but all of a sudden is very into cooking and baking. And they're, you know, book of choice is a cookbook, and they're signing up for all the recipe magazines as opposed to, let's say, the interior design. I'm not saying that there's anything inherently pathological about cooking or baking. I love it. And I love reading cookbooks because it's just sort of like food art. But I find it very interesting when someone all of a sudden says, I love cooking. I love preparing the meals. I do it all by myself. Or when they're serving dinner, say they have their friends over for dinner and people are asking, oh, can I help? And they're like, nope. I got it. I'm going to do it all by myself. And again, I'm not saying anything pathological, but like, I need to do everything about the food. I need to feed everybody. I need to think about the menu planning and plate it and et cetera, et cetera. So I say all this to think about all of the symptoms and behaviors that go along with disordered eating or eating disorder, whether it's restriction. So, okay, fine. Maybe you're not skipping any meals, but are you cutting out something that you kind of know would be helpful to have in the meal, but it feels safer to you not to have it in the meal? So say, for example, and this is really, really subtle, you're having the sandwich and you'd like to have a bag of chips with it, but you're like, I shouldn't, let me not have the bag of chips. Again, like not not pathologizing, not eating chips, but just sort of like, what's going on here? What is making you make this decision? What is making you think about this? What is making you afraid of this? Are you afraid of it? Are you having the smoothie because you feel like having the smoothie, or you feel like you should have the smoothie? Are you working out because you want to work out or because you should work out? And maybe you know too much about eating disorders and you're telling yourself, I'm actually working out because I love working out, and let the record be known that I love working out, but like really deep down, why are you working out? So I think to really answer your question in the most long-winded way is really understanding why are you doing something and really looking at the subtleness of what's going on with maybe what looks like very normal behaviors. And if it's something that is you're doing it for a reason that has everything to do with, I'm afraid of eating, I'm afraid of gaining weight, I want to be with food all the time, then maybe we have something more to talk about.
It's a lot of gray area. Yeah, it's something
Tons.
That is so that's why like this is so hard too, because I feel like I'm sure you likely get this as a therapist, but even as a dietitian, I feel like I can't often give a simple and a straightforward answer to hardly anything, because lot of it is like, well, it depends. And you know, something I talk a lot with my clients about is this idea of the behavior itself versus the intention behind it.
Absolutely.
And honestly, if I'm to self-disclose a little, when you were talking about the cookbook and the strong interest in cooking, I felt like you were describing a past version of me to a T. I cannot speak for all dietitians, but I think I can speak for a lot of dietitians when I say that we end up in this field in part because we went through our own kind of weird obsession with food, wanting to be quote unquote healthy, whatever our intentions might have been. But for me, there was a period of my life when I was just getting all of these cookbooks and like your example of like, no, I don't need any help. I want to do it myself. In part, that was very, well, I want to know exactly what is going on here. I want to know exactly how much of each ingredient is being used. So again, like you said, there's nothing wrong with having baking as a hobby or having a culinary interest. But if it is coming from this place of like, I have to know every part of everything that's in the food, and that's all I think about, and that's the only thing I want to do with my time, I think it does warrant more of a pause to investigate that intention.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just to reiterate, I don't think that any of these things are inherently wrong or means anything wrong with anybody. Like you're saying, what's the intention behind it? What is it doing for you? Mm-hmm. And that's where we open up the questions and see what's actually going on for you as an individual.
Right. That's part of the reason why it's so hard. I know you do a lot of stuff on social media too, but it's so hard to talk about this stuff on social because like you just went back and reiterated, I'm not saying any of these behaviors are bad. Like, we might make a post and someone is like, I can't believe that you say exercising is bad. It's like, no, that's not what I'm saying. It's like, we have to investigate, well, how often is it happening and why? And is there rest and are you fueled? Like, there's so much more that goes into a habit sometimes to help us figure out, is this helpful or is it hurtful?
Yeah. Don't even get me started on social media. I feel like I end up getting into these holes very often because I talk about things that are either controversial or I'm not really sure why it's controversial, just like things that people don't talk about. And because it's social media, it's so one-dimensional. There's not enough room for nuance. And my MO is nuance, 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 curiosity, all that stuff. And when you think about it, if you're coming at it from one perspective or you're just presenting one side, you cannot possibly present every other side at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so then you have every other representative saying, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? What about this? And you triggered me in this way and you triggered me in this way. And it's like, hold on a second. Like, we need to just back up for a second. A, understand who we're talking to. So maybe someone is saying like that doesn't resonate with me. Okay, fine. So then maybe we're not talking to you. We're talking to the person that it's meant to resonate with. And because social media is reaching millions or billions of people, it's obviously not going to resonate with everybody. So like, I guess this is take it with a grain of salt sort of thing.
Yeah. Take it with a grain of salt and also realize at the end of the day, not every piece of content is made for every single person. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, as we're talking about this spectrum, right, of healthy relationship with food to disordered eating to eating disorder. One post that you had on your feed from a while back, you were talking about that as the outward symptoms of an eating disorder or disordered eating begin to improve, that is when the internal work begins. So can you take us through that? Like, what do you mean by that? What is the difference between the external improvements and the internal work? Tell me more.
Yeah. Well, I think that this is usually, there's usually a crossroads where somebody who's sitting in front of me has an eating disorder or a disordered eating, and we're working really, really hard, especially if they have a whole team. So they typically are working with a dietitian and sometimes a psychiatrist, sometimes a medical doctor, but for sure with the dietitian and with me. And they're working really, really hard to challenge themselves to eat regularly and to increase more foods in their diet and, you know, just challenge their fear foods and body image stuff. It's so, so hard. Then they're at the point where they're eating regularly and they're having their fear foods and they're going out to dinner and they seem to be crushing it on the outside. And typically like family comes in and they're like, hooray, you're better. This is great. And internally, I'm not saying all the time, but very often this person is like, I feel terrible. Because all the things that were going on, all my emotions, all my fears, all the stuff that's going on in my life hasn't changed. But the one thing that I knew I had control over, my food and my eating, that usually helped things feel okay, is now gone. And so I have to deal with all this messiness and I don't have a place to put it. So what's really, really hard is that on the outside, everyone's congratulating them about how awesome they're doing and how they look better and how they're doing better. But internally, they feel worse because they still don't have real ways of putting their emotion into either boxes or dealing with it or neutralizing it, whatever word you want to use. And so that's the moment that sometimes people have to make a decision, like maybe not that consciously, but do I go back to my eating disorder? Because that felt so much easier, or at least people can see my pain on my body or in my behaviors. Or do I trudge forward and say, like, I can only voice what's going on. People will not understand me until I put words to my experience. I need to organize my internal mess and not necessarily wear it on the outside. And I think that that's really, really difficult, because when we're thinking of, again, about this, the function of an eating disorder, what drives it, it's so much deeper than just, you know, building up your ability to have three meals and three snacks or whatever it is for this specific person. It's so much more than challenging them to go out to eat for ice cream or for dinner with their friends. And it has everything to do with about how their emotional experience is going on.
Yeah. It's like,
go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, it's like rewiring like how they structure an entire day, right? Or how they go about life in a way. So it's, yeah, it's about much more than just add in another meal, or we need to add in snacks between meals. It's kind of like rewiring. How do we cope with things, and how do we go through life?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially the body image piece, because when someone eats a lot more regularly, especially if we're coming from a much more restrictive background, typically, I'm not saying everybody, but typically the person will gain weight and then their body image goes way down. And so if we think about it, in an eating disorder, when someone's sometimes at the lowest part of their eating disorder, their body image is actually the best because they love how they look. Maybe they don't love how it feels to do it, but they love how they look. And so when we're getting to this person to a healthy relationship with food and a healthy place in their body, very often their body image is a lot worse. And so they're sitting with the decreased body image, or like just the worsening of their body image, and all the stuff on top of that.
Yeah. Is this what people mean when they say things get harder and things get worse before they improve? Is this like an example of that, maybe?
Yes, this is an example, although I don't love when people say it just sort of like as a blanket statement, because It doesn't really mean much when someone's trying to get information about their personal experience. Because first of all, not that what does that mean, but like how does it get better from where, like it just sort of doesn't make linear sense. So I think that when we think about the trajectory of it gets worse before it gets better, because we need to expose all the wounds in order to clean them, then yes, that's what we mean. I only say that because I've had so many people who despair when they hear that line. They're like, oh, come on.
Not this again. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Cause if you're sitting with that and you're going through it, it might not feel the most helpful to hear, like, thumbs up, like things are getting harder before they get better. I don't know if the word is maybe invalidating, but I could see how that would be really frustrating to hear in those moments.
Yeah. And also like, no, thanks.
Like, I want it to get harder. The last question that I had to ask, I'm wondering if it ties in at all. You had something else on your feed where you were talking about the deep work therapy. Mm-hmm. That's what you call it, right? Deep work therapy.
Yeah.
Does this tie in at all? Like when you're talking about really getting into the nitty gritty of worsening body image as we improve relationship with food, I'm sure this extends beyond just food and body, but what do you mean by deep work therapy?
Yeah, so I sort of alluded to this throughout, but I think that I used deep work therapy just because when I say anything psychoanalytic, people run the other way. and there's just a bad rap, you know, Freud in the couch, and that's not really what we do. So I just shy away from the term. Sometimes people use psychodynamic psychotherapy, but it's also so jargony and really meaningless for somebody who's not trained. When I say the term deep work therapy, I think about, you know, what's behind all of this? Why, like a lot of why, I don't necessarily ask it with the term why, because it's kind of hard to answer why questions, but what is the function of this eating disorder? What is the function of this behavior? What are my emotions trying to tell me? How is this part of a larger pattern in my life? And so when we think about, say, for example, relationship with food and body image, you know, maybe someone is doing this restrict binge cycle over and over and over and over again, and they have this poor body image. But when we get into the nitty gritties about it, can we really break down what goes into their decision to restrict? What goes into their quote decision? This is not exactly the most conscious thing, to binge, because very often it's much more dissociative. What happens after? And really almost like lining things up in terms of their emotional experience. Very often people talk about guilt and shame after a binge. Well, maybe that guilt and shame is about something very different from what's going on with their food. And you'd be surprised how much of our emotional experience is sort of dumped onto our relationship with food. And when we're in the throes of our relationship with food disorder, whatever you want to call it, it sort of just gets mixed in. And when we can take a step back after we've done a lot of work, we can sort of try to see, where is my shame playing out? How is it that my interaction with my boss might connect with this? What's going on that's really overwhelming that I would feel the need to dissociate or disconnect in a binge? And trying to understand a little bit more of the emotional experience and how that's driving our behaviors. And then another piece of it is the communication of it. Eating disorders are a communication. I know we don't do it on purpose that way, but it's sort of like, what is my disorder as a whole? And what are my specific behaviors trying to say? Very often people are really angry, or an example of people being really angry. And so I'm not going to eat this and I'll show them. But obviously it's not going to show them. So the question is, how can we learn to communicate what's going on with words instead of through our behavior? So these are just some examples of what might be going on underneath. So what is our emotional experience underneath, and what is our communication via our eating disorder? And of course, thinking about the function, this sort of like umbrella topic of what is the function of an eating disorder? It wouldn't be there if it served no function. And so how is this helpful? How has it been helpful? How has it been the thing that actually helped you survive? And then we can have some sort of appreciation for this thing that we no longer like. But once we have appreciation for it, we can sort of, you know, almost like Marie Kondo, thank it and move on, as opposed to being like, I hate this thing. Let's just get rid of it.
Yeah. It's a lot more of a compassionate way to look at things.
Yes.
And curious too, because, you know, you mentioned before, you gave the example, there might be a lot of anger fueling parts of the behavior or parts of the eating disorder, but to be able to flip the script and ask, like, what purpose has this served and how has it helped me, even though I don't want to keep this, right? I'd like to work through it, but looking at it through, I don't want to say a positive lens, but looking for the benefit instead of just labeling the behavior as, this has been terrible, what did I do? Right. Looking at it again, the more of that nuance that we talked about.
Yeah. And I think you hit it like right on the nose, the curiosity and compassion. That's all of what I'm about, because once you're curious, you can actually ask these really interesting questions about what's going on. Say, for example, with body image, what does it feel like to take up space? What does it feel like to take up more space than I used to? What does it feel like that I can't shrink myself? Or what is the urge to try to shrink myself? How is this connected to my self-worth, my self-esteem? I mean, the sky's the limit with all the questions we can ask.
Yeah, I think you took the words right out of my mouth, because I was going to say, I feel like I could talk to you about this for hours and hours. And I also want to be mindful of our time and respectful of your time. So I don't know, we might have to have you back for a part two, because we only skim the surface. But if anyone is listening to you talk and they maybe want to learn more about some of these social media posts that I've been referencing, or more of what you have to offer, where can people find out about you and your services and how to work with you and all the things and your podcast?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. And yeah, I would love to hang out other times. So in terms of my work, you can find me on my website. That's rachelheineman.com, and everything is there. On Instagram, I'm at Rachel Heineman, and I'm also on LinkedIn, but like I hang out mostly on Instagram, and I haven't gone on the TikTok bandwagon, thankfully, yet. I'm trying to push that one off. And my podcast is called Understanding Disordered Eating, and it's on every platform that you can find your podcasts.
And we'll be sure to have all of that linked, and your website and the podcast and everything, in the show notes. But thank you so much for joining me today. I have prepped you that I have a sign off, a way that I always like to conclude our episodes. So that is all we have for today. Our listening friends, we'll sign off by saying yours truly, Claire and
Rachel.
And that's a wrap for episode 187 here on the Yours Truly podcast with our special guest, Rahel. Rahel, thank you so much for joining us and allowing me to come on your podcast as well. It was really a joy to get to know you and chat with you and, of course, be able to share our recording for other people to hear as well. So if you're one of our listening friends and you want to learn more from her or listen to her podcast called Understand Disordered Eating, we have all of those things linked for you in the show notes so you can find them easily. But if you enjoyed this episode today on the Yours Truly podcast, if you could tap 5 stars, if you have an extra minute or two and you want to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, that would mean the world to me and it helps the show grow and find more people who could benefit from it. If you're not on Apple Podcasts, but maybe on Spotify or another platform and you want to take a screenshot and share that you're listening to this episode on social media, be sure to tag me and Rahel as well so we can say thank you for listening to our episode today. But until next month, have a great rest of April. Happy Tortured Poets Department. Happy all the things in the world of music and spring. And I just hope you have the best month. But I'll see you back here in a couple of weeks. Yours, Julie, Claire.